Hi, this is Emily Ritchie in Portland, Oregon, the executive director of the Northwest Cider Association, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 41. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincolor and I am your Cider MC. On this weekly podcast, where we speak with cider makers and enthusiasts from around the world. And this week, Emily and I will be discussing the workings of the Northwest Cider Association and providing some tidbits for creating your own association in your region, too. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. If you are a regular listener to Cider Chat, well, hello, how you doing? And thanks for subscribing to this podcast. And if this podcast is new to you, well, welcome to our spot of Ciderville. Each week, we are chatting with cider makers and enthusiasts and folks within the trade. And typically, the structure of this podcast, just to give you a little info, is that the beginning part of the show, about 10 minutes or so, it's me talking to you about my piece of Ciderville and any tidbits that are coming across my desk so I could share them directly with you and to provide you some updates on Cider Chat itself. And then going forward, we go right into the chat. And again, this week, that will be with Emily Ritchie. This past weekend, which was August 6th, I attended a wonderful event in New York City called Cider Feast that takes place along the East River. Just absolutely stunning. There will be some photos on the Cider Chat Facebook page. They are up now if you want to take a peek at that. Very intimate, and that's a different kind of feeling that we get at festivals sometimes that could be so big. I'm going to talk more about the fest next week because I had an actual on-site chat there with both Jennifer Smith, who is the executive director of New York State Cider Association, and Sarah Grady, who puts on the Cider Week in New York. In the meantime, here's just a little wee tidbit as I was able to kind of walk around and speak to the attendees about cider. And this one comes from Melissa, who is from Queens. Let's hear what she has to say about cider.
I don't really have the vocabulary to like talk about it really. So.
Well, do you like drinking cider?
I do, yeah.
You do? And how long have you been drinking it?
I'm not really, I mean, I mostly came from my husband.
Yeah.
Because he likes cider a lot, but so I'm just here with him.
So you kind of tag along and take whatever cider he has and drink it and stuff.
I'm trying to get a good sample of all of them.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, really good. Really good.
Are you like, what kind of, do you like the sweet or the dry?
Well, my favorite one was the Down East Unfiltered. Did
okay.
you try that?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not really sure why that one was my favorite. I think it had like, it felt the most full to me.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know, that one, yeah.
Before you drank cider, what would you normally be drinking?
Just beer.
Just beer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I usually like a lighter beer. Like I like the Hefeweizens.
I love Hefeweizen.
Yeah. You know.
And actually, that Down East Unfiltered looks a little bit like a Hefeweizen,
yeah,
doesn't
you're
it?
Right, yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
You're right on that same track. So you know a little bit more about cider than you realize.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks again, Melissa, for sharing your thoughts on cider. And for my own self, I found it really interesting on two accounts of what she said. One is that she originally started feeling a little shy that she didn't have the vocabulary. And that would be a crying shame if that's the route that cider takes at this pivotal moment in time, both in the U.S. and worldwide, as people are finding cider, many of them, for the first time. I really hope that we could keep it the approachable drink that it always was. It's that farm based type of drink, every person's drink, no matter what your socioeconomic level is, whatever your profile that you like, whether it is farm style, a dry cider, a sweet cider. The beauty of cider is that it will meet you and sachet down the Chantalizet with you as you like it. And there is no obstacles or barriers. And I think that's a really good reminder for us to keep it simple and approachable. Otherwise, we miss out on amazing people like Melissa, who is, as she said, hanging out with her husband, who is much more of a cider enthusiast. And I think we'll be talking with him next week too, because I recorded a little bit of that chat. We'll have to stay tuned for that. And then the other piece that I thought was interesting is that she mentioned the fact that she found the Down East Cider. And if you're not familiar with that, this is an East Coast cidery based in Massachusetts. And when it pours, the traditional one that they have that first came out both on tap and now in cans, it looks like a wheat beer. It looks like a Hefeweizen. So she was seeing that and seeing that familiarity, and that's what really brought her in. And I kind of totally agree on that. Don't we kind of move to what is familiar? So again, sometimes it's just that initial step that gets folks to grab a glass and join the chat in cider. Neat-o. Wow. All right, so much going on there. Now, I have some bigger news that I want to be sharing with you. Is that I heard from a current cider in Perkasie, Pennsylvania. They have two new ciders that kind of caught my attention. The first one is called Lunar, and it is said to be inspired by the craft beer, which is a Belgium wit, and it was finished with coriander and orange peel. Doesn't that just sound delightful? Ugh. And the other one is called a Julep, and that's a mint-infused cider. And to top it off, they now have started a club, and it's called The Scratchers. And this is where you could kind of meet with like-minded folks who are interested about cider, just love it, might want to make it, and do a swap. So that's really neat, too. I'll have a link to that group and to Current Cider in the show notes to this episode. Current Cider is a patron of Cider Chat, and you can be too, especially if you're a commercial cidery. They join what I like to call the Cider Going Up campaign. For the cost of 2 bottles of cider per month, they get to be part of this campaign and help keep this chat thriving. Tip of the glass to the folks at Current Cider. Now, Ciderville. As if that information from Current Cider didn't make your day a little bit more happier, this news will just kind of maybe make you spontaneously combust. I know it did myself. I had to be kind of like put on a tether and brought back down to earth when I found out and was able to confirm that Eric Bordelais, who is a Normandy cider maker, has agreed to do a chat with myself. That means while I am overseas in September, I will be traveling down to Normandy and having a sit-down with Eric Bordelais. I just got like shivers thinking about that. If you don't know who Eric Bordelais is, I'm going to be putting a link in the show notes to this episode with Emily this week, and I'll be talking about who he is in subsequent chats coming up. But he is really kind of renowned for his ciders, world renowned. He was a sommelier, and then he turned to be a cider maker, and he is based in Normandy, kind of off the cider route. So he really like can't get there from here, as we would say in the U.S. And his ciders are just absolutely exquisite. If you want to come along on this trip into Normandy and get a little insider peek into what Cider Chat is doing while there, then do become a patron of Cider Chat today. I will be posting special videos and giving all patrons and insiders glimpse into what is sure to be one of those trips of a lifetime. It just coincided with some other work I am doing, and it's going to happen. So, check out the Cider Chat Patreon page. You can find a link to that in the show notes or at the website ciderchat.com. Yippee-yi-yo-ki-yi. Okay, it's time to go speak to Emily Ritchie. She is the executive director, and I just want to say one of the kindest people, because while we were doing this Skype chat, it went in and out. I had to call back Emily, and she just stayed steady on, and I really respect that. Such a pleasure. I only regret I didn't get to talk to her in person. So next time, Emily, over a cider, indeed. We will be chatting about the association and also some upcoming cider events that you do not want to miss. So make sure, if you go to the show notes for this episode number 41, you'll see the links and the contact information there. So without further ado, how's about if you and I grab a glass and join this chat with Emily Ritchie, the Executive Director of the Northwest Cider Association. Welcome to Cider Chat. I'm pretty stoked to talk to you about the Northwest and the region and what's going on there. How about a little bit about yourself and your relationship to cider? Because this is a new position for you, from what I understand. So how did you get to this place?
My background is definitely in food and social justice, and was starting in the good food movement, working for a nonprofit called Food Corps, which across the U.S. is teaching kids about healthy eating through gardening and cooking, trying to make institutional food buying changes through school food purchasing, trying to make school lunch look better. And I worked for them for 3 years and decided I wanted some time to just travel and tour around some really well-established food regions in Europe. I was invited to speak at Terra Madre about a program I had run in Oregon. And Terra Madre is the International Slow Food Conference, which happens every other year in the north of Italy. So I took off and I traveled in Italy for about 2.5 months. This was about two and a half years ago now. And I finished my trip. I did 2 weeks in England because I have English relatives. My dad's British. And as part of that, wanted to see what the Brits do well. I've been a cider fan for a long time, but hadn't really delved into that. I really enjoyed the connection that cider has to the land, really being sort of an agriculture product coming from apples, and decided to spend a weekend in Herefordshire seeing what cider culture looks like there.
As you'd expect, Emily met a bunch of cider makers during her tour in the UK. She was already a cider imbibber, but this time, upon returning to the US, she was even more driven to dive into the cider scene here. You became the executive director for the Northwest Cider Association, which was recently formed in 2010.
I was the program manager for about a year and a half for the association, and then became the director a couple months ago when Sherry Wyatt, our former director, decided to step down. And I'm suddenly at the helm of this really large, incredible region of cider makers. We've got Oregon, Washington, which are, for those who are not in the U.S., those are the top states in the northwest of the U.S., as well as British Columbia and Canada, Montana, and Idaho. So it's a really large region, but it really shows the sort of terroir and international connections that we have within apples, and it makes us a very strong region. And I love how many people around that we have. I just got back from a trip to Montana, and there's a lot of connections that we have among cider makers in this whole region.
What is the goal of the association? Because there's probably a lot of folks listening who are in a very rich cider area, but might have a smaller association or haven't even started creating an association regionally.
Yeah, let me give you a little history on that. we started in 2010, and there were several cider makers in Washington who were coming together and really saw a need to work together to be stronger and move the cider category forward. So there were Sharon Campbell from Tieton Cider Works and Dave White, who is now with Whitewood Cider, is his company, Lars of Snowdrift. They were coming together looking for a way of supporting each other and having camaraderie, helping explore what the cider category is like. And then they brought in about 70 other members, including Alpenfire, Finn River, and Eagle Mount. They're all in that Port Townsend, Olympic Peninsula area of Western Washington, as well as Westcott Bay, which is one of the oldest Washington cideries. They're in the San Juan Islands, beautiful orchard, and Methow Valley. They really had a Washington focus, but then realized very quickly into forming the group that more was better, and being inclusive of other cideries and within the states, they could do more and be stronger. So quickly, some Oregon cider companies you might recognize came in, like Wandering Angus Cider Works, Carlton Cider Works, Bull Run Cidery, Blue Mountain, Easy Orchards. Those folks were established and were brought in and joined in early. Also to say, hey, we can do so much more if we're inclusive, we're not exclusive, we are going to be stronger together, and really educate the consumer on what is this thing called cider.
Well, what is the thing called cider, and how does the Northwest Association define that?
So really, we have looked at how do we define it in really basic terms as well as farther out, like trying to get into categories. But one thing that we've agreed on and that we see a need to explain to consumers still is that at its core, apple joke intended, cider is a fermented apple juice. And that is definitely a message that we keep pushing. And it's been very helpful to have larger cider companies from all over pushing that nationwide. And then for our consumers in the Northwest, they're always looking for craft beverages and quickly come to local members that they're interested in supporting and drinking. So folks around the Northwest now generally know what cider is, and they've often tried a cider, especially if they're in that sort of category of age 21 to 35 or so, which is a really great position to be in the country.
Because
then as a group, we can go beyond that. And we have lots of festivals that are attended. We've got Summer Cider Day was one of the first cider festivals in the Northwest to be put on. That was that group of Port Townsend area cider makers started that. So it's in Port Townsend. It's a really beautiful area where we have about 20 cider makers, 17 or so coming this year. The consumers can come in and taste without that sort of barrier of seeing bottles at the store and not knowing what they are. You know, if it's 750 milliliter and it's $15, that's a huge cost barrier. So they can come in and taste 2-ounce pours and get a sense of what local ciders are like. That helps everyone, because then the consumer is so much more knowledgeable, can start picking out ciders in the store and telling their friends about it too.
Mm-hmm. Are you finding that the cider drinkers in your region are within that age range of 21, I think you said, to 35, or are there any older cider drinkers in that?
We are finding that they're generally younger. And if you like looking at things like Facebook metrics, they're definitely in that sort of earlier millennial age. But it's fun to look around cider events and see there are all ages. There are a lot more women at these events than, say, at our beer festivals. So we're seeing a nice swath of folks, but definitely concentrated in that younger generation.
Mm-hmm. And getting, you know, I'm always kind of curious about this as I'm doing the podcast and talking to Ciderville. So that's where some of these questions come from around what cider is. And that the terminology of used in the region that you're in, is it cider or do you see folks using hard cider? Or are they evenly interchanged?
Yes, they are generally saying cider, but hard cider is definitely a term that's being used. The argument against using hard cider is to keep consistency in conversations. Like, you're not saying hard wine or hard beer. So yes, there's a confusion because during Prohibition, right, there was, while the cider orchards were chopped down, wine vineyards generally weren't as much because there was religious reasons to keep those. And then, of course, beer was easier to come back after Prohibition. You don't need the agriculture infrastructure. So there was that confusion because apples were then turned into juice, and that was called cider. You know, what is now called hard cider is a category and is growing. Mm. We want to move people away from saying hard.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is all part of the conversation that's happening right now across the U.S. specifically in terms of the terminology. So I find that really interesting. And I was also curious, too, do you find that your members prefer to be called a cider maker one word or a cider maker two words?
Yes, I've heard your arguments or your conversations about it on
There's no
this
argument.
Podcast. And generally, we're using one word, just like winemaker. And we're finding people are responding well, consumers are responding well to cider maker. Oftentimes we do get that question of, well, are you a brewer or what do we call you? And cider maker is pretty straightforward and well-received.
Mm-hmm. And how do you see folks drinking cider there? Do they, you know, because there's some approach it as serving it like one would with in a glass, like one would with wine versus in a pint glass. So if folks are visiting the Northwest Cider Association region of both, you know, Canada, British Columbia, down to Idaho and Montana and Washington and Oregon, how would folks typically expect that to be served? Or is it across the board, dependent upon the cider maker or that cidery or the cider bar?
Exactly. Cider is served differently across the board based on what the cider maker wants or what it's intended for. You know, if it's a sessionable cider pre-dinner, like at a happy hour time, often we're seeing it pint glass, but if it's, you know, being paired at a brunch, it might be in more of a champagne glass. I've seen it all sorts of ways. And we actually just sent some of our cider makers over to Japan through a grant from the Oregon Department of Agriculture, where they had to make that decision. They were serving cider to a chef group from Osaka. And they are not very familiar with cider other than maybe French ciders. In Japan, they have an equivalent to our, it basically implies soda. And so figuring out the terminologies there, we decided to add the word craft to distinguish it from the soda cider. But then also explaining how you serve it. And these were a bunch of chefs from very high-end restaurants, so serving alcohol is a little more familiar for them in a wine glass, and really walking them through how is cider made and what do the apples look like here in the Northwest and why is this important, how would you serve it with food. It was all paired really well from the appetizer to the dessert. I think those sorts of education classes or talks are important in other countries like Japan, but just as important to do here in the Northwest and in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And this is part of, you know, I saw on the website, there's a great website for the Northwest Cider Association, by the way. So folks listening in Ciderville can note that. But what I saw was kind of referring to that cider revolution. And, you know, I think that's part of the cider party, is that it goes in so many different directions. And we're not really limited in the same way that craft beer or wine or even spirits is limited in that certain kind of scope of you must do it this way. There's, I don't know if you agree with this, but I don't think there's any kind of must in cider as there is maybe in wine.
Yeah,
pun intended.
I think that's one of the I find it really fun because of that. You know, you don't have to sip with your pinky out. People are not shocked if cider's in a can, but you can also put it in a wine glass. I think that's also where our association has been very progressive in being inclusive of all sorts of ciders and not saying, well, we're only going to stand for one thing and in one way of doing it. It's really important for the whole category. The market is huge right now. There's plenty of space, and I keep saying it, but we are stronger together. And I want to put a props to David White for doing our branding on our website too, because I think our early branding, which he's done and he's on our board, which I have an incredible volunteer board backing me up on the association. That's really helped professionalize cider and really help the category in general. When people see it's a professional industry and we can show up to conferences, you know, go after grants from state departments of ag, for example, that's where we can really make a difference and help support the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And are you talking about the actual logo, which is an apple in a circle, and the top is, you know, the stem and a leaf, and then the bottom is as if you could kind of see the cider juice? Is that what Dave was part of?
Yes, Dave White designed that, but he manages a lot on our website and keeping it really looking put together. He catches things all the time that I don't see.
No, that's good. A big squeeze to Dave for sure. So you're doing this work. You have this amazing membership. It's not just limited to cideries or a cider maker, right? It's even broader than that.
Right. Our members, we have about 300 members in the association. Many are nano cideries. A lot of our members are cider makers, but I think people don't always know that we also have industry partners, like juice companies. Fruit Smart has been a really great supporter of ours. We also have cideries in planning. We can be a great support for a company just coming up and sort of thinking through how they're going to build their cidery, what equipment do they need, you know, where do they source their apples or do they buy juice? There's so many questions as you're developing a cidery, and our cider makers have been very open and willing to share their knowledge, because if we can have high quality from the get-go from a lot of cider makers, that's going to help everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the Cider Makers Toolkit also that I highly encourage folks to look at our website for. It's sort of a wiki design where people are going to keep adding to it as they find resources to help each other. Because we get those questions all the time as the category grows.
Mm-hmm.
Then also we have enthusiasts in our membership, which are people who are wanting to be more connected to the industry, and they can be from all over the country or the world. They want to know what's going on in one of the oldest cider associations in the country. They want to know what's happening at our festivals. We often give discounts for our members to come in. They get our newsletters. So people who want to help the category grow and want to be more involved and sort of get an inside picture as to what's going on in the Northwest, a lot of our members are also cider enthusiasts who are not necessarily working in the industry full time.
Mm-hmm. Now, just to clarify some terminology, I'm very used to the word nano. Well, we hear that used in terms of breweries. And then a nano cidery, how are you defining that? That's typically based upon the amount that's being produced. So what is the critical amount to stay within a nano?
We started as an organization where everyone paid the same dues, no matter the size of the cidery. And a couple years ago, members came back and said they would like a tiered system, sort of to sort of share the burden depending on how big your cidery is. So our smallest category is a nano cidery, where they are producing 0 to 10,000 gallons. And it goes up through micro, small, large, extra large, and a volume cidery, which is quite large. And all of those numbers are on our website under Become a Member. If anyone's looking at developing their own association, that's easy to find on our website, or you're welcome to reach out to me too.
Great. And we'll have all that contact info on the show notes for this episode. And I also want to mention with Fruit Smart, I did speak to Dave Watkins, and that is on episode 17. So if anyone wants to listen to that, that's called Got Juice, and it's apple juice suppliers from the U.S. to the U.K. And Fruit Smart, I met him at the CiderCon that was in Portland, Oregon. So you do have a really broad range of folks involved in that. And I imagine you're probably seeing an influx of cideries startups constantly right now. Is that what you're seeing, or is that an assumption on my part?
No, that's totally true. It's been fun. In the 2.5 months that I've been director, we've probably had 8 to 10 new members. We are growing really rapidly, and people are seeing the benefits of joining into an association where we can support each other, pool our resources, and really move forward together. We have an incredible listserv, sort of a Google group, that our members are constantly talking to each other. They're often sharing buying power. Like if they're going to order some cans, they might as well order with another company to bring the price down.
So you are buying in bulk for cans. That's amazing. What a fortunate thing to have with the association. I was wondering, Emily, if, you know, folks who are hearing this and are out in their own part of Ciderville and they have this critical mass of people, is it difficult to start an association? Is that something that other U.S. associations help each other? And what would be your advice for that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I wasn't around when our cider association was started. I have a lot of sort of oral history people have told me, which is funny to say because it was, you know, 6 years ago. But that's how I've learned how it has been to start the association. I have been in touch with folks in New York starting their association and California. I'm very open to helping folks. And I hear it's sort of different in different regions. I think a lot of the trouble comes when people are a little competitive with each other. And not to say competition isn't good, but the sort of the idea of an association is to support each other and to be collaborative. And I think that's why ours works so well. I mean, I love cider. And also what keeps me doing this every day is the people. Mm-hmm. My board is such a wealth of knowledge and great support. And I think that's what has really been the glue to the organization from the get-go. We also had a lot of support from NABC, the Northwest Agriculture Business Center. Since 2012, our sort of ad hoc group of volunteers were realizing the cider category was growing really quickly and needed, they're like, we can't manage all this as a volunteer group of folks starting their own businesses and often working part-time on their own, which I see in the cider world all the time. So they turned to NABC for help, to support with marketing, to do accounting, to go after grants. And in 2012 or 13, they got a Washington Department of Agriculture grant that supported some early marketing, also supported some research for the Washington State University program that Carol Miles runs with a lot of bittersweet cider fruit trials. And that's when they were also able to hire Sherry Wyatt as a part-time contractor, and she managed that grant and was our first director. But people need to keep in mind she was part-time, and it's only now, you know, 2.5 months ago that the association has been able to hire a full-time staff member to really move the association forward.
That's right. So kudos to the association and good luck on that journey. How exciting. So I'd like to talk about some of the events. Some of them might have already taken place by the time someone in Ciderville listens to this, but I have a feeling, even if we mention the event now, that taking a look on the following year, that event will kind of roll in again, probably at the same time of year. So why don't we talk about some of the upcoming events that you might have on the tip of your tongue there and share that with folks out in Ciderville?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So the one that's coming up in days is our Portland International Cider Cup Awards Party. So this is the association has taken over a cider competition that a few folks in the Portland area, such as Cider Riot and Reverend Nats, started early on, and we've grown it. We doubled the amount of entries we had this year, and we got a bunch of very professional judges during Oregon Cider Week, which is every June, to judge during that time when they were all in town. They were industry professionals. And we've awarded 7 medals, gold medals, and also a best of show. But no one knows the results yet. So we're having an awards party at the end of July. It's July 28th. Square Mile is hosting it. They're Widmer Brothers. I'm really looking forward to as well Summer Cider Day, which is every August. This year it's August 6th. It's in Port Townsend, which is just a gorgeous little town. It's nestled between the Puget Sound, which is salty water going into the ocean, if people can imagine where that is. It's sort of across from Seattle. And nestled between that and the Olympic Mountains, which are just stunning, usually a little bit of snow dusting even into August. And that's a really small, intimate event for our members to do a tasting. You usually have about 18 cideries tasting maybe 3 of their ciders. And you're right out on the deck of the Northwest Maritime Center in town. Just gorgeous, a really beautiful event. So that's August 6th from 12 to 5. Also, you can go to our website or to our Facebook page for that event. So
I'm going to just interrupt you for a minute. I will be posting the photo of Port Townsend. I have been to Port Townsend. It's absolutely beautiful, very approachable city. And both of these events, I imagine, are going to be taking place on a yearly basis. The Portland Cider Cup, that's kind of like your own little Oscars in-house because no one knows the results. That's pretty cool. And then this early August event up in Port Townsend, that's also sounds like an annual event too. Is that correct?
That is true, yes.
Okay, all right. Now you're going to be talking about another upcoming one. Is there the Washington Cider Week or something before that?
Correct. Washington Cider Week happens every September. This year it is September 8th to the 18th. And for those of you who can do math, that is more than 7 days. But we have so many events. It makes sense to make it a 10-day event where there's a bunch of tap takeovers. There's cider pairings. There's often bike rides or history talks with cider. It always is launched with the Seattle Cider Summit, which is the 9th and 10th of September. And that is just an amazing cider festival that grows every year. Alan Shapiro puts that on, and there will be probably over 50 cider companies tasting outside in a really beautiful setting.
Bravo.
We have BC Cider Week. That's in October every year. This year is our second annual. We're having a launch event at Sea Cider, which is near Victoria, so also incredibly beautiful. There will be events across British Columbia, including an event in Vancouver. So listeners are there or are going in October or want a reason to go, that will be a really fun time to check it out. We also have Cider Rite of Spring, which is it's a little larger of our cider festivals and a great time to meet a lot of our local members. It's traditionally held in the spring and a good time to taste what is sort of has been maturing over the fall or some seasonals that have been released. So those are also coming up. But we do have an email list that we often blast out about our events that I'm happy to put people on. We use MailChimp, so it's just for us to send you folks stuff.
Well, there you have it. If you didn't realize that there was so much happening in the Northwest with cider, certainly you got a good sense now about the cider scene there. And thankfully, we have someone like Emily Ritchie leading that scene and helping the cideries get going that are just starting up and working with the board. Just a wonderful, wonderful group of people out there, many who I have met and many that I look forward to meeting in the future. So thank you again. And at the end of this chat, stay tuned for a little end piece there. I'll give you a little sense of what it's like doing a chat online. And also, you could get a tidbit. I did something which is called a Clammer, and that's a Clammer app is where podcasts like myself can post 24-second little clips. And if you didn't hear the one about the cidery for sale, well, stay tuned to the end of this episode. Next week, we'll be speaking to Jennifer Smith, who is the executive director of the New York State Cider Association, and also Sarah Grady, who helped found the Cider Week in New York. That's going to be a fun one because I got to sit down face to face and talk to those two gals. So it's a little bit of a wild time right along the East River, and I'll be speaking more about the Cider Fest then too. If you haven't subscribed yet to Cider Chat, you can find it in any place where you find your favorite podcasts. Cider Chat is now available on iHeartRadio, which is a great form that you could easily download an app and use it for free. And also iTunes, and if you have an Android, there is Stitcher and Google Play. And find the show notes for each episode at ciderchat.com. And please let your friends know about this podcast, those who love cider. If they don't know what a podcast is, dang, just grab their phone and find the app and download it and help them subscribe today. I'm going to be rolling out of here. It's a beautiful day in August, and I hope the same is true your way. Until then, when we meet next week, this is Rhea Windcolor signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. One of the many reasons that you could support Cider Chat via the Patreon page is so that I can get a better internet connection to my line for chats like this, because after the upteenth time, Emily was still hanging in there. Here's a little peek into that reconnection.
Hi.
Oh, yeah. You know, Emily, I just want to say that you have really stuck in there in the true spirit of making cider, in that, you know, sometimes you're making it and the generator goes down and the cooler is not working at that critical moment, and your perseverance is fantastic. So I know that you have very strong footings to hold this association forward. So I really want to thank you for your patience.
No, this has been fun. No, I love this podcast, so it's very fun.
You mentioned that Lee was going to be selling her orchard. I was wondering, what's that about?
Oh yeah, she's ready to retire and just hike day in and day out, and she is looking for someone who wants to buy the business.
Well, I could definitely let folks know about that too. File your bliss and become a cider maker. Contact Lee McAlpine at Montana Ciderworks. Going up, going up.